As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Jessica Hayden, a rugby journalist at The Times, and this is your special Women's World Cup preview podcast. The opening weekend of fixtures takes place this weekend, so throughout the tournament, as well as your usual Monday episode of The Ruck, we'll be bringing you an extra podcast each week on a Thursday, focusing on the events out in New Zealand. We'll speak today with England's Sarah Beckett, who unfortunately didn't make the Red Roses squad for the World Cup, but she's going to join us here to chat about the disappointment and preview England's opening game against Fiji this Saturday. Plus, we'll be speaking to Ciara Bevan, the Welsh scrum half, about how the newly professional Wales have prepared for this tournament. But first, Rachel Burford, the former World Cup winner with England, is going to be my regular co-host on this podcast throughout the tournament, and she'll be over there in New Zealand working with ITV. Right now, she's on a plane somewhere in the world trying to get to New Zealand, so I caught up with her early in the week to look ahead at the World Cup. So, Rachel, you're flying out to New Zealand. We're only a few days away now from the start of the tournament. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling really excited to get on the ground. Like, I think from afar, we can just see the amount of kind of coverage and the excitement of the tournament that's building up right now. And yeah, so I'm getting all those social media glimpses. I'm hearing from some of the players, and I just feel, and I know we always talk about, you know, World Cup cycles, getting better every time, but this does feel really, really different. And I'm really excited for the players that they're on this platform like they deserve. And so, yeah, I'm just really excited, obviously, with the record ticket sales that have been announced for the opening weekend at Eden Park. And it's all set to kick off in the right way. So yeah, I'm not so much looking forward to the number of hours flight that I've got to endure. I'm basically going to be in the air from Tuesday to Friday. So, but yeah, can't wait to get on the ground and be part of it on the sideline.
Yeah, so if you stay awake for the first match, I mean, it's a bit of a surprise match. We're not really sure what we can expect from Fiji. As a pundit, you're going to be there. What are you expecting from Fiji?
Look, I don't think it'll be far from what we know as their DNA. You know, they want to play a thriving, fast, high-tempo, offloading game, as we saw them play in the Super W. They can produce some wonderful moments. And if they're able to, you know, stick in the battle against England. Now, England is probably one of the best defensive teams going into this tournament. And so it will be really challenging. But at the same time, England have never had this kind of threat where runners come really hard at the line and have the ability to offload and get the ball away. So, you know, it will pose a different challenge to England. But, you know, England's tempo is probably going to be something that they'll find difficult to be able to keep up with, just because of the level that they haven't been playing as long as the level that England have been playing at. You know, Fiji's first World Cup. So there'll be plenty of excitement from the team themselves. But I think you know, what a cracking game to have opening. You know, we've not had this fixture before, and it's going to be an exciting opener for all English fans, but also for everybody back home in Fiji. And we know what Fiji do in terms of their rugby and how they get behind it. So, yeah, pretty exciting opening game for England.
Those fan bases seem to have grown in the last kind of few months. We're seeing this explosion of women's rugby. Do you think that's in any way because of the Euro success and seeing how successful the European Championship was in women's football?
Oh, it will definitely have an effect and an impact. You know, the amount of people that had eyeballs on, I think, what was it, 17 million people watched the football, and that will make people start being curious about sport in general. And I think we're definitely seeing, you know, the likes of new fans coming in, being engaged and wanting to be part of something. And I think the Red Roses brand and what they've done as a collective group to really engage with their new fan bases, you know, at the sellout stadiums over the Six Nations, you know, the players actively say and ask, you know, we want to go around and we want time at the end of the game to go and thank people and sign shirts, and because they know how important that impact is and keeping hold of it, not just kind of being like, oh, look, this is great, we've got full stadium now, we've done it. It's actually, no, we're here, but we've got to keep it here. And the players take massive ownership of that.
See, when at the end of the matches, when I go around at the end as well, I often notice girls wearing their girls rugby club hats, which is obviously your work, girls rugby club. What do those girls tell you about what does it mean to them to have their favourite rugby players coming around after a match and taking selfies and signing shirts?
Oh, it genuinely means the world to them. And I think the Red Roses know that. And that's why they do it, because they know the impact it really can have on just one person. And I know we focus a lot on them inspiring girls, but they inspire adults, women, men, young boys, young girls. And, you know, it has such an effect on them. And the biggest, the other effect in part, it's not just, oh, I've met her, it's actually, I can be her, I could do that. And I think when they're so close to it, they've just witnessed an incredible match, and then all of a sudden they come over like, oh my God, I'm talking to you. But it's now within their mindset that actually I could be a professional player, I want to be a Red Rose, I want all of this, I want to take part. And I think that's the golden moment.
So we're talking about accessibility and players being available, but of course for many Red Roses fans, watching this tournament is going to be incredibly difficult. There are games that kick off just after midnight our time, 4 a.m, 5 a.m, 6 a.m, and the kind of most sociable hour kickoff we have is against France at 8 a.m. Do you think that will limit the exposure this tournament will have?
I think, of course, it's going to have some limitations, isn't it? And it's not as easy just to be able to be in an evening where you can just put the TV on, or it's at a weekend. They're at the weekend. So that's obviously the point of where maybe some younger people can stay up a bit later. Maybe parents will make some allowances. But I think, you know, it's critical that we capitalise on the opportunity that we have. And I think there'll be a lot of smart ways of thinking around social media, around coverage, around, you know, what comes after those games. Are we just going to put the game on and then, you know, talk about the result, as opposed to how do we then re-bring that into, you know, an afternoon slot? Where can we maybe package things and have highlight shows, etc., that we're continuously keeping this moving? Because, you know, they are really challenging times. People have livelihoods, people have work, they have family, they have kids, they've got all things to be getting on with. But having said all that, when this gets momentum, which we're already seeing before game one, people don't want to miss that. They don't want to miss out on that opportunity. And so, you know, I think diehard fans will be there, and I think we'll pick up a lot along the way as well. But I think it's kind of what else can we be doing post the final whistle to make sure that what's just been and what's just happened, we get that back out into a normal hour in the UK.
Yeah, that's a really good point about follow-up shows and stuff like that. And I imagine social media as well will play a big part, and the Red Rose in particular, but really across the whole tournament, nearly all of the women's rugby teams have a very strong social media presence, particularly
on TikTok, and that's where young fans are nowadays, aren't they? They're on TikTok, they're on YouTube. So that's important as well, isn't it? To make sure that the fans are still getting that engagement, even if it's through a screen.
Oh, 100%. And you know, we've got to be realistic. Some people don't want to watch the 80 minutes. Some people just want to watch Jess Breach's highlights of her tries, or, you know, Poppy Cleal's big carrot. So, you know, we've got to make sure that we're catering for all different audiences so that we capture as many as we can. And social media is such a great platform when it's used really, really well. And again, I think this is even 2017, I don't really think we really capitalized on social media. I'm trying to think back when I was at the World Cup, like how much did we really use to grow the game? Whereas now it's such a important tool to be able to reach different audiences and you know, cater for those audiences. What do these people want? How do they want to consume this content? How is this going to make them go, oh, actually, I live near the Stoop, so I'm going to pop down and watch Harlequins because I've watched, you know, Ellie Kildane at the Rugby World Cup. So it kind of has all those links into it as well. But it plays such a big part when it's done really well. And I think, you know, even seeing World Rugby's feed and the big media day that all the players had, all the photos being taken, you know, they will all get used consistently and constantly throughout the World Cup. And again, something that we never had before. So it's such a vital tool.
We talk about what you never had when you were playing. This is the first World Cup that you're not taking part in. I think for 15s, you played, is it 2006, 2010, 2014 and 2017? Is that right?
Yeah, so that's right.
This is your first one where you're not playing. Are you taking your boots with you? How are you feeling?
Well, Harlequins are making me take my boots with me to make sure I keep up my running. Obviously, I think it's going to be a little bit mixed emotions right now. I'm not right in it, but I'm just so proud and so pleased about where the game is. And I think the Red Roses have so much to do with that in terms of how they paved the way over the years. And it just makes me incredibly proud that what's going to happen in New Zealand, I'm very fortunate to be there and be part of it in some way. And so I guess that's probably helping with my not playing at the World Cup, is the fact that I still get that amazing opportunity to be on the ground, to witness it and to be part of it. And, you know, it is going to be the start of something very, very special for long term for women's rugby.
Thanks, Rachel. And just final question. I don't know if this is a pointless question to ask you, but we're going to ask it anyway. Who is going to win the World Cup?
I won't look past the Red Roses. I think the fine form that they're in, the depth that they have in their squad. Simon Middleton has, you know, he is blessed with combinations, players, rotations, whatever player he starts or comes off the bench. They're in such a strong position. And I have to also just kind of compliment the way that the group have gone around their work rate and the level of detail. Even though they have been miles ahead of people, they never just sat still. And I think that's a marking of a championship side. So I'm going to definitely put my money on England if I was a betting woman, but I'm not. But let's not underestimate New Zealand, home soil. They've had a lot to go into the last, 9 months going into this, the amount of investment they've had. And, you know, we've seen them improve very quickly over a short amount of time. So, yeah, back in England, but they're going to have a couple of teams definitely trying to challenge that.
Thanks to Rachel Burford for joining me earlier this week. It was great to chat to her ahead of the tournament. We're recording this on Thursday morning, so she'll be in transit. She's currently in the air, I believe, on the way to New Zealand. So we'll hear more from her next week. But we can now preview this weekend's opening fixtures. And to do so, I'm delighted to be joined by Sarah Beckett. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, are you okay?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you.
Good. Now, of course, we should mention the fact, Sarah, you were in the training squad for the World Cup, and it was a training squad of 39. And Simon Middleton, the Red Roses head coach, had the unenviable task of whittling that down to 32 players. And unfortunately, you were one of the players who didn't make the final squad for New Zealand.
Yeah.
But what Simon Middleton said to us in a press meeting was that any of the players who didn't make the squad could have walked in to another test team. And because of the class that England have and that depth in every position. But I'm sure that that doesn't make it any less disappointing when you've missed out on such a dream. And I would like to say, you know, I'll read out, Sarah, your Instagram post. You wrote about it because I think the words are so good and capture just how difficult it is being in the number one team in the world. So Sarah wrote, "Heartbroken doesn't come close. A lot of the time, everybody on here just shares the good. They don't talk about what it's like to dedicate your life to something and not have it turn out well and your dreams not come true. They don't see the hours you put in, the occasions you miss, the selflessness of what we do in order to ultimately fail. To have to turn around to people you love and tell them you're missing their birthday, their achievements and important occasions to try and improve yourself wasn't worth it. It's probably one of the toughest things I've had to do. The guilt and sadness are overwhelming. I'm beyond gutted, but I'll learn lessons. In time, and I'll probably need a lot of it, I'll learn to be proud of what I contributed to the group. I'll learn what resilience truly looks like, and I'll learn to be better as a rugby player, but more importantly, a human. Thank you, everyone, for your messages. I'll be rooting for the girls, and I wish them all the best in New Zealand. We've all worked so hard, and they deserve to bring some silverware home." So what prompted you to write that status, Sarah?
I felt like it was a bit of an elephant in the room, to be honest. Obviously, the squad went out, and my name wasn't on it. And we found out, you know, social media is everywhere at the moment, and people are commenting left, right and centre. And I'm in a fortunate and unfortunate position that I'm doing this with Mo Hunt, and we'd had a big chat about it, obviously both not selected to go to the World Cup. And I'm absolutely gutted for her as well, but she's been an unbelievable support to me, and likewise, hopefully I've been the same to her. And we chatted about it, and you know, people were coming up to us and asking about it, and we just thought we'd rather get it out. Hence, which probably prompted both of our posts. We thought we'd rather get it out there and let people know what we're feeling. But for me also, I think it's a side of the game that isn't explored very much.
Yeah.
You know, you see on England Rugby social media, the girls out in New Zealand and whatever else, and probably not once do people ever think about the girls who are left at home. And the girls who have been left, and you know, we all dreamed that dream. We all wanted to go to New Zealand. We all worked as hard as each other. And some girls just don't make it, and it's tough. It's really tough. And social media is both a blessing and a curse, because obviously you're so well connected to people, but all my friends are rugby. Most of my world is rugby. So what's on my feed is rugby, and you know, that's tough at the moment. And I think that's prompted a couple of the girls who didn't make it to take themselves off social media for a little bit, maybe have a bit of a detox. And I think, like, it is incredible the amount of social media presence that's on at the moment about the World Cup, but it's also a bit of salt in the wound for the girls who didn't make it. So yeah, I guess we just wanted to address the side of the game that many people don't see, and the roller coaster that you do go on as an athlete.
It's interesting that the extra eyes that we have on this World Cup, it's amazing in terms of the media coverage and the social media interest. And obviously we've had the Where the Rose documentary last week that was inside the Red Roses camp and looking at how you build up for the tournament. But actually the other side of that, as you've said, that's so interesting that actually that makes it even more difficult for the players that miss out. And you talked about Natasha Hunt, Mo Hunt there, known as Mo, for those who don't know that. How important has that friendship been in the last couple of weeks, having to deal with this non-selection?
I think it's been vital, to be honest. Obviously, I know Mo, and we've been teammates in England, but I wouldn't have said she was one of my closest friends or anything like that. Like, we got on fairly well, but to have somebody who truly understands what it feels like, and like I said in my post, heartbroken actually doesn't come close. Like,
yeah,
it sounds dramatic, but like it is a massive heartbreaking thing. And you know, we've been through very similar emotions, very similar ways of coping in terms of how we've grieved this loss for what it is, really. It takes time, and you know, it's not just about not going, it's about the memories you thought you'd make, or the shared experiences you thought you'd have with people who that you're not going to have. And to have somebody who truly understands what that feels like, because your family are absolutely imperative in all of this, you know, they're vital and I wouldn't be anywhere without them, but none of them can understand exactly how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Whereas Mo gets it, like, we get each other. And I just think she's been so important for to have honest conversations with each other. And for somebody who knows what it's like to have been through that training camp and not make it, like, training was tough. Training was really tough. And yeah, when you fall on the wrong side of that, that's pretty heartbreaking, to be honest. But I think all the emotions that people probably don't think, like, for me, the main one was embarrassment. Right. Having to go and tell people that I'd not made it, or wait for the selection to come out. Like, people, obviously people that you care about, know when selection's coming out, and they say, oh, please let me know, and, you know, sending a text saying I haven't made it, or I'm not going, and, you know, your friends and family, they support you and they obviously believe in you, like, no, don't worry, like, you're gonna go, whatever. They turn around and say, actually, I'm not going. And it's guilt and embarrassment. Guilt's the one I talked about in my post, but like, embarrassment, like, I didn't want to see my grandma, for example, for 2 days because I couldn't go and face her and tell her that I hadn't made it. And that's pretty heartbreaking to do, because I'm so tight with my grandma, like, we're best friends. And like, when I go home still at the moment, like, what is it now, like, 3 weeks, I can't go to, which again sounds ridiculous, but I can't go to my favorite, like, brunch place, my favorite place to go for brunch, because I know the owner and I know she's going to want to talk about it, and I can't talk about it yet. And like, I think that side of it isn't really recognized. Like, people, like, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. You tried your best and you didn't make it, but like, when you're a professional rugby player and then you've not made it in the top 32, that's really tough. Like, you dedicate your life to this, and it is quite embarrassing to have to turn around to people and say, I'm not good enough, or people haven't thought I'm good enough, and having to go through that rejection for what it is, really. But
I mean, now with all that heartbreak and having to process that, will you still be able to watch England play, watch your teammates?
I don't know whether I'm there yet or not, to be honest. I didn't watch the documentary. Wasn't able to do that. And it, again, this is where guilt comes into it again, because my best friends are in that team. Like, my best friends, I've got best friends on the USA team, I've got best friends in the England team. And it's probably easier to watch other teams, probably not as easy to watch England, but then you feel guilty because your best mate's playing and you want to support. And like I said in that post, like, I'm rooting for the girls, I want them to do well, but there's also that little part of you that is like, oh, I don't want them to do too well without me. But of course, that's absolutely taken over by the part of, I want my friends to succeed. But then you start to feel guilty about that little part of you that's having those nagging thoughts. And I think that's natural to have, but then obviously when it comes down to it, I'll be behind the girls 100%, and that part of me will go away. But it's tough, and it's tough to deal with, and that guilt that comes along with it. I think that's a big one to deal with.
It's brilliant to hear you speaking so openly and honestly about this, especially kind of not being able to watch the games. That must be so tough. It's something that you've worked so hard towards. I know every player, they got the chance to choose how they found out the news. Would you like to share kind of how you found out that you weren't in the squad?
Yeah, so we had three choices. We had just find out when the squad got announced at the general time. We had the opportunity to have a phone call with a coach before it came out on the group, or a text. And I opted for a text message. So the squad was getting announced at 7 o'clock, and from 6:30, if you weren't going, that was when you'd sort of get your phone call or your text. And I sort of had an inkling that it probably wasn't going to be good news. And I'm quite a private person, so I decided to take myself away. I was at home. I didn't want to be with any family. I just wanted to be by myself. So I went and sat at the beach at home, and obviously got that text message. And then, yeah, sat there, cried my eyes out for a little, well, not for a little bit, for a long time. And then my mum and dad basically begged me to come back home. So I went back to my dad's house and my mum came round, and yeah, I basically just cried for the whole evening. And then that's when you go through that whole roller coaster of emotions. Obviously, first of all, you're gutted, like, you're absolutely gutted.
Yeah.
You go through like a whole spectrum, like anger, devastation, heartbroken, like not understanding. Because the thing is, when you're an athlete, and anybody will tell you this, like, you believe that you should be there, because if you don't believe you should be there, you're not going to be good for the team. Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got to have belief in yourself, and obviously you believe you're good enough to go, and then when somebody else doesn't see that in you, that's kind of tough to take. And like, I think another thing, like, you get messages from obviously friends or teammates or whatever, and that can make it, it's so nice to receive that support, but it can make it harder as well. And I know, like, a couple of girls just turned their phones straight off because they couldn't deal with the messages, or I mean, I chose to reply to them because that's what worked for me. But yeah, some girls couldn't look at their phones for a little bit or something. But then, yeah, I think it's all different ways of dealing. Like, some girls haven't gone back to rugby quite yet. Some girls wanted to get straight back in. So, yeah, it's just very, very individual.
And I know Simon Middleton said that the players who weren't selected, it's a long tournament, they should be staying fit. They should be prepared to go. If you were to get that call at some point in the tournament, how do you turn around your emotions from feeling so disappointed to suddenly being prepared to play test level? Is that something that you've thought about?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I won't know until or if the call comes, you know what I mean? I've not been in this. Well, I've been in this situation before where I've been dropped from the squad and then had to be called up last minute for an injury. You know, it happened in the last warm-up game. When Morwenna got injured in training, I've had it in the Six Nations this year in France, and you just have to go in and try and wipe your slate clean and do what's best for the team while you're there. And it can be actually really physically and mentally exhausting having to do that. Yeah, you just have to realise you're there for the team, and you have to put yourself last in that situation, sort of thing.
It's so sad here, but we're really grateful for you being so open with us about that transition, that journey. Now, England have their first match on Saturday, 8th October, this Saturday. It's at 4:45. You can watch live on ITV. That's 4:45 p.m. in New Zealand, 4:45 a.m. if you're over here in the UK. Now, Fiji, this is the first time that England have played Fiji. What are you expecting from them?
I think they're going to want to play open, free-flowing rugby. I think they'll be very physical. They'll probably like a few offloads and try and get in behind us. So, yeah, I expect them to cause a little bit of chaos, to be honest.
And that pool, let's just talk quickly about Pool C. So it's Fiji, England, France and South Africa. France, obviously, we see every year in the Six Nations. Yeah. It tends to come down to the wire between England and France. Is having someone that's like a familiar rival in the pool nice for England? Is it more of a challenge? Is it, what can you just kind of, as a player, how do you think the squad will be feeling about facing France compared to South Africa, who, you know, in comparison?
Yeah, I think it's a funny one, isn't it? Because we're so familiar with them. Obviously, we played them a lot in the last couple of years. And thankfully, we've come out on the upper hand quite a lot. So psychologically, I think that's a bit of a boost for us because we know how we've beaten them before. But you never, I think the thing with France is they're so unpredictable. You never know what you're going to get. And we're so aware that, and the girls will be so aware out there that they can produce magic from nowhere. And that's what makes them so dangerous. And it depends which France turns up. But I think it's also nice to have some familiarity with players, with their style of play, and know what you're going up against. Whereas South Africa, a bit of an unknown entity for us. We had, well, the girls had the training session against them in the autumns when I was in camp. And that was nice to train against them and sort of good to know a bit more about them. I'm sure the girls and the staff are all watching their clips of games that they've played and getting a good handle on how they're playing and what they're doing. And I'm sure the girls will do a good job against them.
What's your prediction for Pool C then?
England will come top, hopefully. France, ooh, I don't know. It's really hard to choose. To be honest, I don't think I know enough about South Africa and Fiji to pick between them, but I'll go with Fiji and then South Africa.
South Africa bottom of the pool. That's interesting. It's a tough pool. It's being called the pool of death. And I think that's because for South Africa and Fiji, that's an incredibly tough pool to get out of.
It's awful.
Yeah, when you're facing two teams that play very regular rugby with not just the Six Nations, but also autumn fixtures, and England being the number one team in the world, as well as being on the back of a 25 consecutive win streak, which, of course, you know, you've been a big part of. Now, Pool B, we'll just quickly go through the pools. We've got Canada, USA, Italy and Japan. Any players or anything from that pool that you're looking forward to?
I think the USA-Canada game is going to be a really good game. Obviously, they're known rivals as well in terms of they play each other a lot. But I think from the game against USA that England played, USA have come on a lot.
Yeah.
Canada obviously had a tight-ish game against Fiji. So I think that game will... I think they're very competitive against each other, aren't they? So I think that'll be a good game to watch. I think Japan could be a bit of a surprise coming in. We've never played Japan while I've been in the England setup, but knowing girls who have played them have said they're a tough game. And they had some results against Ireland that they battered them one game and then got beaten in the other game. So it's kind of interesting to see how they do. And Italy going in, you know what Italy bring. They're a good side. So I think they could go and upset a few people as well.
Italy always seem to surprise when you least expect it. And I think that they're often written off, but they absolutely shouldn't be. So that pool B, Canada, USA, Italy, Japan, I think could be actually one of the most exciting pools.
I actually think that's one of the tightest pools in terms of results-wise. I think that's going to be really tight and really interesting to see. As much as you call pool C, pool of death, I think that one could be pool of death as well in terms of trying to get out of it and trying to get the results that you thought you might get.
We're speaking to Kira Bevan from Wales shortly, and she's in Pool A with Wales and Scotland, Australia and New Zealand. And I'd imagine that Kira might think that Pool A is Pool of Death because that's got New Zealand and Australia in it. And of course, familiar rivals again in Scotland. That's again like an incredibly close group, and that between Wales and Scotland, that's going to be incredibly close. And then that's going to be the third spot, I guess, in that pool. You'd imagine New Zealand and Australia. Do you agree or would you disagree with that?
No, I think I'd agree with that. I think New Zealand are obviously odds on favourites to win that group. I think they've shown massive improvement since the autumn series in their last couple of games, which has been very evident to see. I think Scotland and Wales is going to be a really tight game, isn't it? I think that's going to get a bit fiery. But to be honest, I think there's going to be a lot of very tight, very good, interesting games to watch. So, I think it's going to be a tight one. I think that's... I think every pool is tough to get out of if you're in that scrap for the last sort of place. So, it's going to be an interesting one.
Are there any players in the England squad that you've been training with that you think will explode at this tournament? Any kind of rising stars in the squad?
I think Sadia played really well in the USA game. She's obviously starting this weekend. I think that she has a big and massive future ahead of her. I think obviously Marley has been playing really well for ages. She's not going to bolt because she's already at the top, but just consistency from her is going to be absolutely crucial. Both sevens that I've mentioned. So
we've also got some young players. There's Maud Muir on the bench and Connie Powell as well. Connie's only got 5 caps. Lucy Packer, she's on 5 caps as well. She's on the bench, and you know you'd have known her from Harlequins. You know, is it an exciting squad, isn't it? Because there is actually quite a mix of ability, even though we see them as like the most experienced squad. There are some young players coming through with. You know, Sadi has only got 4 caps, who you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, to be honest, I think Maud's a good one. Maud's been unbelievable in training, and she's an unbelievable player and just so good for the squad in terms of morale. She doesn't mind being the butt of a joke a few times. So I think she could have a massive tournament as well. I think people would be surprised at how well she can play.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us and for being so open. We wish you all the best. And obviously wish England all the best as well. But we're just really grateful for you to have such an open conversation about the dark side of rugby that we don't tend to hear about as much. So thank you very much. Next up, I'll be heading into the Wales camp to chat to scrum half Kira Bevan about how Wales are preparing for the tournament. Kira, hello, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good. So it's a big week. We're in the World Cup week already. Are nerves creeping in now?
I'm a little bit, yeah, you could say that. I think everyone's got that little bit of edge about them, but I think it's good news because we know the task in hand, really.
Yeah, so you kick off against Scotland on Sunday, the 9th of October, 5:45 a.m. kickoff for those over here and 5:45 p.m. for you in New Zealand. That's a big game to start with, but it's kind of a opponent that you know well. How are you feeling about that match?
Yeah, I think it's a massive game, and personally, I'm really excited. I think it could potentially be a very good way to kick off our World Cup campaign if everything goes to plan and we stick to the game plan that we've put in place. So yeah, really, really excited, and hopefully we can go out on Sunday and get a job done.
Great. And now in New Zealand, I saw online that you had a lovely welcome to the country. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Yeah, so when we landed in Auckland, Cecilia's family, there's quite a lot of them, they all welcomed us in the airport with like chocolate necklaces and things like that. So that was really nice, and obviously it was great for her as well to see that. I don't think she's seen them in a good couple of years, especially with COVID and before that. So yeah, it was great for her, and yeah, they just made us feel really welcome as a squad.
We should just mention that Cecilia is one of the Wales players who is travelling over to New Zealand and is causing quite the stir as such a phenomenal player and character. She's big on TikTok, Kira. Is she the best TikToker in the squad, or are you trying to claim that crown?
Oh God, no, she can have that. She's brilliant. She's probably too cool for this squad, to be fair. Yeah, she's brilliant, she is. And yeah, the opening ceremony on Monday in Auckland, you know, I think all eyes were on her for a little bit of that as well. So she's just got such a nice way about her, and yeah, everyone loves her.
What happened at the opening ceremony with Cecilia?
Well, she just got up and started doing a Tongan dance, I think. And yeah, it was brilliant. And yeah, you know, I know her culture means a lot to her and her roots and stuff. So for her to be able to get the opportunity to do that, it's great for her. And yeah, she smashed it.
So the build up to this World Cup, obviously for Wales, you face Canada and England, and two quite big losses, 73-7 to England, 31-3 to Canada. They're, you know, that's playing the top team in the world in England and the third ranked team in Canada. Playing the best in the game, is that the best way to prepare when you've got a pool which is quite a challenging pool as well for Wales?
I think we just took positives from them games. You know, especially the Canadian game, we made six line breaks. So for us, I think it's just about finishing those opportunities because we know we can create them. And likewise against England, it was just about staying in the game for as long as possible. You know, they are the best team in the world, and you know, if we can create stuff against them and you know, finish it off, we're in a pretty good place. So I think that's what we'll be looking to do against Scotland on Sunday is, you know, we can create the opportunities, but can we finish it off really? So that's probably one of the biggest things that we'll focus on heading into the weekend.
It was a tight match in the Six Nations as well, we should say, against Scotland. Mm-hmm. There was only 5 points in it, and you won, of course. So it's a tight contest, I imagine, on Sunday.
Yeah, very, very tight. And I think we're subconsciously preparing for that. I think we know it could potentially go down to the wire. And, you know, like you just mentioned, you know, we had the better of them in the Six Nations, but we know a World Cup is a completely different aspect. It's, you know, it's their first World Cup for a very long time as well, and they're going to come out all guns blazing, and I think we just need to mentally prepare for that and not take it for granted. And you know, they were actually beating us during the Six Nations during that game, so you know, we ideally don't want to leave it as late as what we did in the Six Nations, but you know, our mindset is to just go out early and hopefully get a job done fairly soon. But I'd imagine as well they're probably thinking the same thing, so. But we have massive respect for Scotland. So, yeah, it should be a very good game.
It will be a thriller, I'm sure. And then after you play Scotland, you've got New Zealand up next on Sunday, the 16th of October. Mm-hmm. That's a 3:15 kickoff. That's AM if you're in the UK. That's on ITV and S4C. New Zealand, home nation, second best team in the world. Incredible to play them on home soil. Are you excited for that or more nervous?
Bit of both, yeah. Like you said, you know, home World Cup for them. They've got Australia this week, so that should be a very, very good game for them as well to open their World Cup campaign. And yeah, we head back to Auckland for that one, and I'm sure it's going to be a thriller. You know, having heard how ticket sales have gone for this week's game, so yeah, really excited, I think, for that one. And so, yeah, hopefully we can, you know, put a good show on for the home crowd and for our families coming out as well.
Yes, we should mention your mum and dad, the ultimate Wales rugby fans. I used to see them at Swansea when you played there, and then at Bristol, and they're all, I think your mum's the loudest supporter on any touchline. Are you excited? Are they coming out to New Zealand?
Yeah, I think they're somewhere in the air now, actually. I think they've taken off from Adelaide, so they're en route as we speak. So yeah, I'm pretty sure they'll be buzzing to get out here, and I'm sure you'll spot Liz somewhere in a daffodil somewhere in the crowd.
It'll be lovely to see some daffodils in the crowd, actually. And how lovely for you to have them there. And then the final game in Pool A will be against Australia. Again, a big nation to face. This is a tough group, but Australia, again, you know, you feeling confident about that match?
Yeah, I think obviously our main focus is obviously the Scotland game and getting a job done there. But we can't hide from the fact that, you know, we are going to be playing New Zealand and Australia as well. And we kind of do have to have some form of eyes on that a little bit. But yeah, we'll be looking to, you know, hopefully, you know, get a result as well against Australia, you know. But we know they're going to be a very tough physical team. And after watching them in pack four in the summer, you know, it is going to be a tough challenge. So yeah,
we should say, for those not aware of how the pool structure works, finishing third could be enough to go through to the knockout stages. So really, this game against Scotland is huge, because even if, you know, coming against Australia and New Zealand, really tough rivals, Scotland much closer, this game, Scotland against Wales, it just feels to me like that could potentially be the decider of who goes through to the knockout games.
Yeah, 100%. I think as a squad, we're all aware of that, and I'm sure the Scottish girls are as well. So there is a lot riding on this first game, and ideally we want to win two games, and you know, obviously three. We don't kind of want to leave it down to points difference. You know, we kind of want to, you know, control what we can control, and if we can get out of the pool by winning two games, then that makes our life a lot easier. Yeah, and obviously then if a quarterfinal is on the cards, it's not as bad as what we would hope.
Of course. So Wales, you've been professional since January, and you've had a behind the scenes documentary crew with you since you turned professional. And that seems to have really helped the build up to this tournament. You've been around the game for long enough. Do you think that this tournament has a buzz that we haven't seen before?
Yeah, massively. I think, looking back to the 2017 World Cup in Ireland, just even having the media day we had on Saturday in Auckland, and everyone having a picture and a green screen and all that sort of stuff, you know, we didn't have that in 2017. So even just from like that point of view, it's come on leaps and bounds. And yeah, there's a lot of hype. Even now we're up in Whangarei, and the hype up here is brilliant as well. And in Auckland, it was just buzzing. So yeah, it's come on massively. I'm just really excited to get going now.
Of course. And you're travelling with Wales. Some of your best friends are with you in the squad. Has it been lovely to be away with them?
Yeah, 100%. You know, obviously, Karen's my roommate, so we spend a lot of time together. And obviously, you know, Siobhan and Cara and Jazz, Alicia, you know, we all get to spend our days off together going for coffee. And we've all got, you know, we like to do stuff as a squad as well. But then our social battery sometimes runs a bit low, and it's just nice to be able to switch off into a smaller group and grab a coffee and have a sit down. So yeah, it's pretty chilled.
Great. Well, Kira, we're wishing you the best of luck, and fans can watch at 5:45 a.m. That's in UK time. So good luck, Kira, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with.
there's more to iPhone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thank you, Kira, for that look into the Wales camp. And thank you also to Sarah Beckett, the Red Rose there, who told us about the awful situation she finds herself in of not even really being able to watch her own team play at the World Cup because of her personal heartbreak and grief, as she said, about not making the squad herself. And of course, thank you to Rachel Burford for that interview we did earlier this week. This has been The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Normal service will resume on Monday, where you'll get the usual roundup of everything that happens over the weekend in the Gallagher Premiership. Until then, follow or subscribe from wherever you get your podcast from, and thank you very much for listening.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.